Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're very welcome back. Well, you love your difficult men. One listener says, how did nobody mention Succession? That was priceless, unmissable TV. Can't wait for the next season. Oh my goodness, I haven't even watched one episode of it yet. But let's stay with stage and screen, or screens big and small. We're going to look at what cinema and television is out there for us over the next week. Joining me with the hot tips today are movie editor for entertainment.ie, Brian Lloyd, and Kay Sheehy, series producer for RTE Arena. You're very, very welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are going to start with the big screen first of all. Okay, Black Panther returns for the first time since the tragic passing of Chadwick Boseman. What did you think of it?
Well, I suppose, you know, it was such a worry for them, for Marvel and for the film company, what they were going to do after Chadwick Boseman died. So it took them, 2018 I think was that.
Yep.
So they've been thinking and working on it for that time. I must say, to have like a lot of fantastic kick-ass women, mainly, or they're all black, in starring roles is just hard to look past. I mean, I think the script is rather convoluted, but still
a bit clunky.
But still, Letitia Wright, who is now starring in Aisha, the wonderful Irish film by Frank Berry, is also Chadwick Boseman. That's T'Chula's sister, and she and the Queen are there wondering, you know, how they're going to continue with the royal house. And they're under threat. They're under threat from all the UN nations who believe that they're using this great mineral they have for ill, whereas in fact they parade mercenaries into the UN. This is the Wakandan queen. And they say, no, it's you people, it's you states are being bold. And then they're coming under threat by another seemingly kind of more a good person who is a winged god who lives undersea. And he lives undersea because of the repression of the whites who drove his whole nation undersea. And he wants Wakanda to enter into a pact to take on the world to safeguard this wonderful mineral that they have. But Wakanda are peace-loving.
Yeah, and I suppose the big question is, did it successfully pass over the passing of Chadwick Boseman? That's kind of the question I've been asking everyone. Brian, I want to ask you just about a movie that people are talking about it, could be talked up for an Oscar for Bill Nighy in Living. Is that a bit of a surprise?
Not at all, because he's a very, very good actor. I mean, the thing of it is with Bill Nighy is that he's had his struggles for sure. And I think as well, when you see his performances in the likes of, say, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, or even something like About Time or Love Actually, like, he is one of these actors, I think, that he kind of relies on sometimes a little bit of a silly voice.
And remind us what it's about. It's about a guy who knows
it's based on the Kira Kurosawa film called Ikiru, and it's essentially Bill Nighy is this bureaucrat for the City of London. He's given a terminal diagnosis, decides that he's going to go off and live his life as he always meant it to be, winds up in Blackpool, falls in with this author played by Tom Burke, ends up drinking a lot, realises that actually no, he wants to come back to London and try find a purpose to his life, strikes up a friendship with a colleague who is this young woman who he sees in her just the vitality of life and that she enjoys everything in life, and he tries to find that for himself and takes on this project to build a playground in this crater left over from World War II, from the Blitz. I absolutely loved it. I mean, I think what's so fascinating about it is that this film, this idea has been done before. Breaking Bad obviously would be one, and that's kind of taken in a toxic way. But what they do here is that it's really about finding purpose and finding a life worth living. And even at, you know, if you have 6 months to live, 8 months to live, you can still turn it around.
And you think it could get him an Oscar or
definitely,
a nomination?
Oh, definitely. I think it'll get him a nomination. I don't know if it'll get him an Oscar, but it'll definitely get him a nomination.
Extraordinary for him.
Yeah.
Kay, I know that you are recommending a documentary portrait of the infamous Hellraiser, Richard Harris, who I had the privilege of interviewing many, many years ago in New York as a baby journalist. It was absolutely amazing, and I still have the original cassette of my interview with Richard Harris from all those years ago. But there is a documentary about him in cinemas this week, The Ghost of Richard Harris. What does it reveal, or did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did and I didn't. I loved it because it's told from the point of view of his three sons. That's Jared, who we all know from Chernobyl, yeah, and other starring roles, Jamie and Damien, all involved in the film industry. And I mean, it's quite sad looking at it from their point of view, because they, when they were kids, they were packed off to boarding school when they were six, and they really didn't know. They knew this fantastic man that they'd see at holidays, but they never really knew what he did or anything. So even though subsequently they worked with him and all of that, so it's a kind of a thing of a rediscovery. And obviously Elizabeth is their mother, and she died fairly recently as well. And she always said in her book about Richard Harris that there was Dickie Harris and Richard Harris. Mm. So they go back to Limerick to kind of find the Dickie Harris, first to Kilkee, where he was this wonderful athlete. Mm. Then he played rugby in Limerick, and how he would have given away all his awards, yeah, to play rugby for Ireland.
So you see that, yes, part. Yeah.
But then you see the Hellraiser. And now the Hellraiser is quite boring. You know, he claims that he drinks because he loves to drink. But obviously he was quite obnoxious and could be violent. But then obviously that fed his art as well, because Stephen Ray gives this wonderful insight when he was acting with Richard Harris. And he said, you have that terror when you were up acting against him, because there was that threat of violence.
So you got to see the two sides of it. Brian, I want to talk to you about, I haven't seen the trailer, but movie star and Paul Mescal, who is a preteen child. I can't get my head around that.
Yeah, well, he's a young father in it, in fairness. Yeah, he's a young father in it. He's on the cusp of turning 30, and he takes his young daughter to this kind of package holiday resort in Spain. Or no, sorry, not in Spain, in Turkey, rather, I should say.
Aftersun is the name.
Aftersun, yeah, is the name of it, yeah. This is incredible. It's written and directed by Charlotte Wells. And essentially what the film is that it's kind of one of these hangout films, if you know that sort of way. Mm. It's literally just two characters interacting with each other, just enjoying their company, sometimes not enjoying their company, friction a little bit, in the sense of that he's separated from the child's mother. The child is now kind of coming into puberty, coming into womanhood, is starting to notice boys and girls and all the rest of it, and is at that kind of awkward phase, and he's trying to reach her in the sense of, you know, even though they've been estranged, but he doesn't want to lose touch with her, and is trying to make her see that, look, you can tell me about anything, no matter what's going on. And what I found interesting as well was that it then jumps forward to when she is now a mother herself. And it's only like one or two scenes. It's only one or two scenes where she's just looking at the video recording of their holiday. And it's incredibly bittersweet, because you realise now that she is going to eventually face the same things that she faced. And it's the idea of that, like, time is a circle and it'll just repeat itself again and again.
And speaking of things repeating themselves again, MK, I am, in the interest of work, sat and watched five episodes of The Crown last night, or four of them at least. Not really worked out for me this time around. Have you?
I thought there were some episodes that I really liked. I thought it was very, as you say, your word, clunky at the beginning, especially things about the royal yacht Britannia and whether they can save it or not. And then these awful, terrible, clunk-filled metaphors about the yacht being like the Queen and the royal family.
And the eagle, the constant eagle.
Very heavy-handed.
Following Philip around. But then there's the Al-Fayed episode, which is episode three.
Which was really interesting.
And that's fantastic. You see Mohammed Al-Fayed as a young, poor boy in Egypt. And then, as you see him grow and go to England, and he wants to be as good as the royal family. And I think you then see the awful snobbery of the royal family, about nobody wants, he's bought his way to a seat beside the Queen at polo, and of course she doesn't want to sit beside him, and then Diana sits beside him, and because she's a normal human being who wants to talk about fashion and shops, they have a great time,
and the rest, Kay, it's history, as we know. I am looking forward to watching the end of it, but unfortunately we've actually come to the end of the programme. Kay Sheehy, series producer at RT Arena, and Brian Lloyd, movies editor of entertainment.ie, thank you for joining me.